Welcome to LBB's Open House, our podcast on how to build brands better. I'm Suchita. On the Open House podcast, I have candid conversations with founders, CXOs, and investors behind India's most compelling enterprises. As a co-founder of LBB, I love deep diving into all things marketing and distribution across different industries, and of course, learning from my guests. Joining me as a co-host is my colleague Asa. You'll hear from her as well. Today, I'm in conversation with Kunal Shah. But before we get into this episode, just letting you all know that Open House is recorded as a live session. You can check out LBB's web or app and sign up for our live chats, where you can ask my guests questions in real time. Getting back to my guest. Kunal is the founder and CEO of Cred and has been the founder and CEO of FreeCharge, two of India's foremost fintech companies. He's seen it all, from zero to one to scaling to tens of millions of users, selling a company, starting up again, and has been an angel investor and mentor in a bunch of fantastic startups, including Gojek, Razorpay, Zilingo, and others. If you're on Desi Tech, there's no way you haven't heard of or don't follow Kunal. That's where you'll often find him sharing his notes and learnings. This conversation was fascinating, from the target addressable market in India to understanding human motivations, how to take feedback, and the importance of Twitter trolls. We get into it all. Kunal's a very first principles thinker, and his responses to my questions reflect the same. Packed with takeaways, personally, I've re-listened to this episode a bunch of times already and have pages of notes from what he said. Without further ado, let's jump right into it. How are you, man? Kunal, how's COVID treating you?
Good. When you are an entrepreneur, you're so used to almost dying so many times that you almost develop a muscle to get excited during crisis. Uh-huh. So I'm going through that phase right now.
What crisis could Cred have? After $175 million in the bank, Kunal, what crisis could Cred have?
I don't know why are people quoting that number. That's not the amount we raised. But I think people don't correct news anymore. It's the world of fake news. So it's okay.
So before we get into our conversation, I just wanted to give a quick introduction to Kunal. Most of you probably follow Kunal. He's awesome. I've had a chance to interact with him a bunch of times. And again, it's just amazing to hear from him, get his feedback, get his inputs for more than one reason. I think first and foremost, what's most incredible about you is you're not that typical founder, at least in the Indian startup ecosystem, right? So you're a philosophy honors graduate. Somehow through a very interesting, string of events, which we'll delve into, you started FreeCharge, you sold FreeCharge, and now you're the founder and CEO of Cred. The disclaimer that I'm going to give to everyone on this webinar is we will not be talking about Cred's business model today, guys. So if you have any questions, don't put them in there. I think what makes Kunal awesome, and I think the one thing that I've had a chance to learn from him is how he thinks. And just being an independent thinker, which, like you said, in a world of Twitter fake news and just a lot of clickbait, becomes difficult to achieve. So I'm going to stick to being a P personality type and not a J personality type, Kunal. And I'm going to start with a question that's, number one on my agenda, which is as a founder, right? It's easy to find problem statements. In fact, I was listening to one of your interviews. You said things appear to be problems when you find better solutions, right? So everyone needn't necessarily begin with with the world's most rhetorical problem statement. Let's start with, how do you think? How do you think in first principles, and how have you sort of, created constructs around the products that you've built over the past couple of years?
It's a very broad question, but I believe most startups in India are solutions trying to find a problem. Because we do not really understand what the problems of the country are, right? And therefore, the word problem is a problem. And what we need to understand is what is the motivation of the country and what are the inefficiencies that exist to achieve those motivations, and how can your product remove those inefficiencies to achieve those motivations. The word product came into being because a lot of engineers and VCs use that. But you did not solve a problem. You could remove inefficiencies that exist to achieve a motivation. For example, people are absolutely motivated to know their future, and they are believers of astrology. So if you remove the inefficiency of getting good advice from an astrologer, it's a business model. And a lot of times you'll say, the problem I'm trying to solve is, and you will never fit the astrology business model over there. I'll give you another example of what I've seen. Most of us know India spends disproportionately on weddings. Correct. Yet there is not a single unicorn or even $100 million company, at least in my understanding, which is operating on wedding space. I'm not talking about dating and shadi over here. I'm talking about actual event of wedding. And the reason is that the motivation in a wedding is to find something unique to do and not finding efficiency to do something. Nobody wants an efficient way of getting a lehenga. People want to discover a cool place to find that lehenga that nobody has discovered yet. So inefficiency is actually more important over here. And that is only possible by saying that, can you actually help them increase their status and discover more cool things? Help them find a place where they can do cool stuff with drones. Because our weddings are anyways like circuses, right? So we want to create more circus so that people appreciate us. So the thing is that India, because most of us have not studied humanities, the concept of motivation is alien to us. But it is not difficult to find out if you honestly ask your questions to your parents or relatives. But in India, parents and relatives also do not give good advice because they love to sugarcoat you to keep your status up. They will not give you honest feedback. India is a country of sugarcoating. Haan beta sahi hai, bahut sahi hai, kya badhiya design hai. And then you never get real feedback. And nobody in your life gives you real feedback because everybody is built on insecurity. So we build a mutual admiration club. And mutual admiration club is not great to build businesses. Because nobody really tells you that if you're doing something stupid. But the thing is that when we don't understand something, we also take pride in shaming it. Because, I mean, you mentioned about credit business model being discussed. And it's quite fascinating that investors should be worried about my business model, not everybody else. But the whole world is worried about it. Because when we don't understand something, we want to basically shame it, right? So that we feel good about ourselves. And that is not ideal for ourselves. And I often tell people that the reason we don't mind our business because maybe we don't have a business. And if we did, we probably would not be minding other people's business. But we love to mind other people's business because it's a way of feeling better for ourselves. But anyways, that's beyond the point. The point is that in India, there are so many motivations that exist, right? And if you study carefully your parents, your extended family, and you see where do they spend? Where are they motivated to give spends? And I'll give you a small example. There's a movie I saw recently. I'm forgetting the name of that movie where Nina Gupta at a later age gets pregnant and has an adult child. I'm forgetting the name. Badai Ho, yes. So in Badai Ho, there is a scene where this Sharmaji, whoever is the dad is of Ayushman, goes to apne saale ki wedding, saadi saale ki daughter ki wedding. And then he makes this remark, which was quite fascinating. He says, let's say Mr. Sharmaji tells Mr. Varmaji, bahut badhiya decoration kiya hai. And Varmaji replies, kamate kiske liye hai? So basically, the Indian society is all about collect that money and go wipe out on 2 days and 3 days, right? And it's basically an emotional buildup till the time you go all out, right? And you go, don't calculate cost for your daughter's wedding, for your son's wedding, and so on and so forth. And it's a massive status-seeking behavior that we do. And therefore, we are penny pinchers. We save money to blow up on that big day. Now that is very fundamentally different from a US society where it sounds absurd that most people run out of budgets for the wedding that honeymoon ke liye paise nahi bachte, right? And a lot of couples take personal loans to go on honeymoons because a person who is getting married wants to show on Instagram that I married somebody nice and therefore they want to go on Instagram, and a lot of personal loans are about honeymoons. because family ran out of, and family has no interest in promoting a honeymoon because that increases no status for them, right? So, and you have to understand the core motivations on an everyday behavior basis. But unfortunately, we have a country filled with engineers who know how to build dams on rivers of motivation, but there are no skill sets left in the country to know where those rivers exist. So what do we do when we build a dam and there is no river flowing through it? If you do not understand how to detect rivers, you start tweaking the dam. Ek kaam karta hu, ye dam ke andar aur do feature dalta hu. But river hi nahi hai, boss. Instead of detecting rivers, we have built a country of dam builders. And therefore, we are extraordinary dam builders for the whole world. The IT industry is big and all this outsourcing is big because nobody has been trained in India on how, and I'll tell you what is the biggest problem. A hypocritical society happens when you are not self-aware, right? Self-awareness and motivation is only truly understood when you understand yourself. And most people have not met themselves yet. And I don't know a founder who's successful, who has not been through a journey of knowing themselves first, then eventually hope that they understand their customers. So long answer to your short question, but I hope it made any sense.
No, in fact, it's interesting, right? You spoke about how finding your customers' motivation is kind of like step one, right? And like you said, for you to be able to figure out what motivates your customer, you need to have your own head screwed on correct, right? Let's talk a little bit about opportunities. So when you when you think of the kind of motivations that exist in India or even worldwide. What are the most interesting ones that catch your eye, right? And maybe if you could, before we get into that, if you could talk about application of understanding of these motivations into, say, a cred, right? So what was the motivation that you saw there just for, the rest of us over here who are trying to practically apply what you just mentioned? So if you could just talk about that and also, maybe we could dig into opportunities. What are the motivational opportunities that exist?
I talked about rivers of motivation, but not all rivers are big. Some rivers are small, some rivers are big. For example, people who want to learn how to fly a drone may be a small river, but people who want to be rich may be a large river, right? And people see motivations very, very differently. So the right way of thinking about this is think about life in a way where you have to detect the market size of something. And a lot of time people don't understand, but platforms are created on simple utilities first. I'll give you a small example. Instagram, Suchita, do you remember when did you join Instagram? Do you remember a faint idea how long ago?
I think 7 years ago.
What was it that time?
I cannot recall, but it definitely wasn't as interesting as it is now.
It was an app to mostly to apply good filters to your photographs.
Right. Yeah.
And I remember the amount of ridicule Facebook had faced when they bought it for $1 billion. Who the hell buys a photo filter app for $1 billion? Every platform starts with a simple utility. And we have seen hundreds of those examples in the world. But every time a simple utility comes up, like cred, you are like, are ye kya hai? Ye business model kya hai? And I'm not saying we'll be successful. We may not be. 90% of startups fail, so we are likely to fail more than succeed. But the point is that there is a playbook. LBB started with content and does commerce on top of that. Correct? Mm-hmm. And content to commerce playbook is a known playbook. Mm-hmm. Multiple people have done that. Right? And the problem is a lot of times we do not understand opportunity has a playbook to create scale. And the reason we are what we are is because we are in early stage of the tech industry over here.
Absolutely.
There are a lot of things that are not understood. But the amount of criticism that exists in this country is 1,000x more, which makes it harder to build because India, first of all, is not, according to me, one country. We have 25, 26 countries joined to become one country. And I think British did that for their administrative convenience. And then we accepted India. But the thing is, we never became India because we are still 25 states. And there's a lot of mistrust. Are ye Guju? Are ye Panju? Are ye sab South wale? Like, we use these words quite easily because we've never become one, because our cuisines are still different. Our religions are still different. And although we have tried to have this view of a unified India, we have culturally not become one. Unless we ban marriages within the same state, that you cannot marry somebody from the same state or somebody from the same religion or somebody from the same language speaking. You'll notice one thing, that when couples who are from different background, let's say a Guju marries a Panju or Panju marries a South Indian, the kids speak English. Because that's when we truly India has emerged, which is neutral. And therefore, the neutral platform in this country is English. This session is done in English because that's the only way 500 people will understand what I'm talking about. We have other neutral platforms. Cricket is a neutral platform, not from India. Our neutral beverage is tea and coffee, not from India. When we have a party in office, what do we order, Suchita?
Yeah, pizza.
Pizza, not from India. Biryani is not from India. Samosa is not from India. Khichdi is not from India. And the reason we are what we are is because of these neutralities of these platforms that kind of combine us through other traits. Mm. So we chose the direction of kind of saying, hey, can we just kind of combine on credit card as a one entity? Because everybody is busy doing building for the masses of India. Mm. And we realized that the spending capacity of that customer is just not there. And we've noticed that during COVID. Most people are unaware about basic data. I'll give you a small data point. And we've discussed this, Sujata, before. 8% of urban Indian women work. Only 8% have financial independence. That is lower than Pakistan. That is lower than Bangladesh. 60% of urban Bangladeshi women have financial independence. And we are completely clueless because we live in this bubble which has no data. And if I extrapolate this data for India, we are 22% female participation of labor. Our per capita income cannot grow unless there is dual income in the household, which usually creates 7-8 jobs. So dual income households have a lot of help, a lot of services they consume, and that creates jobs going forward, right? For example, Urban Clap works well more in dual income households versus single income households. And these are jobs created. Unless we understand per capita of this country, will not. 92% of Chinese urban women work. 92% versus 8%.
Yeah.
But our view of these matters are so limited that we tend to just kind of make random remarks all the time about nations and not realizing that per capita income is a core reason. And therefore, our averages hide things more than tell us. For example, if you remove the top 2% of India, our per capita income will drop to $600 to $700 per annum. China is at around $9,000 now per annum. And that is the level of concentration that we have in this country. So I think the opportunity is only understood when you understand what are the market size of it. A lot of global companies love to come to India because they have other markets where the ARPU comes from. So Facebook would love to be here because we have hundreds of millions of customers who can be added to the DAU. But the ARPU that Facebook makes from this country would be probably $2-3 per annum, which is the lowest in the world that they make. But it's okay because when they go to global investors and say that now we have 2 billion DAU and maybe 400 comes from India, nobody cares about it because it sounds like a very big number.
Yeah.
So India is the DAU farm for the world. And we don't realize some of these things. And we are still at a very basic, necessary level for the masses of India. And the market is just not large enough. Mm. But I don't think most entrepreneurs do any amount of research on the market sizing.
Absolutely.
Or understand what is market sizing. But we love the idea of being entrepreneurs, and I think that is causing a lot of heartburn, a lot of failures, and a lot of toxic environment around entrepreneurship, because anybody who raises $100 million, we use it like a taunt. Arey, aapne to $100 million raise kar liya, aapko problem kya hai?
But has anybody ever asked anybody who raises money how to raise money ever? Have we learned that skill from them? So this country is extraordinary as at envying people's possessions and have zero interest in possessing other people's skills. I don't know why. For example, if you do a good job of managing to get a lot of DAU and LBB, and I would be, instead of taunting, "Are, ha, ye 2 million DAU jo LBB baat karte hain, wo sab pakwas hai." And that's a very common thing for India to say, discounting other people's achievements. And you know what happens because of that? Because of this, global companies win over here. Because somehow LBB is interested in making jokes about cred, and cred is interested in making jokes about LBB. And you know what? Amazon is winning. Because envy is hyper-local. You envy people who you know, who are like you, who are familiar to you. So Chita, you and I don't envy Elon Musk because it's not hyper-local. It is outside our range of envy. And therefore, the India crap story is so true because we tend to constantly pull each other down instead of raise each other up. I'll give you a small example. I remember helping one of the founders very early on. This is a very successful founder now. And the next day he messaged me that, "Hey, Kunal, thank you for this, but what are you expecting? Can you be clear about this so that we can have clear terms?" And I'm like, "I'm just helping. Because I have been in a place like yours and I did not understand some of these things. And you understand something else better than I do. And I'm just helping." Mm-hmm. And people in India are like, "Ye kyun help kar raha hai? Kuch toh hai iska." And because this is the country where if we shared notes, we could not score marks. And this is a zero-sum mindset that we have. Yeah. In an entrepreneurship, we all become extremely wealthy by sharing notes.
Yeah.
So when I tweet, I'm not tweeting because I am going to spread some gyan. If I wanted likes, I can just put one motivational poster every day and I'll get thousands and thousands of likes. Mm. I share insights on what I'm learning and thinking myself, because if I can share that, it's more valuable than me giving my time. But the classic conditioning of this country is, "Are, gyan mat de yaar." But why? You will not learn. Somebody else has been a time traveler, been somewhere else,
Yeah. Seen
something. And I don't know. I think we've reached a point where we are not very supportive of each other. And I see China, when I go to see Chinese entrepreneurs, they hunt in packs.
Yeah.
Like they are just like ruthlessly winning against the old world because they have just decided to hunt in packs.
Mm.
Over here, I have rarely seen two startups exchanging notes. Mm. Forget about their teams exchanging notes.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is like, "Main isko ye secret sab bataunga to wo aage badh jayega." Sab peech hai usme.
Got it. So actually, I want to, in the interest of time, I just want to make sure that we make this as constructive, because again, I have learned so much from you. And I think that one point that you brought up, right, just understanding your target addressable market. It's so interesting. We have, hundreds of thousands of local brands that are recommended on LBB. And it's fascinating because when you ask them, "What's your TAM?" Usually they don't know what TAM is, which is totally cool. But then when you ask them to, a deep dive into who's your customer, how much do they earn, you see brands sort of fall back, right? So my question related to exactly that is, when whether it's been FreeCharge or Credo, even the awesome companies that you've invested in, whether it's, Gojek or Zilingo, any of these other guys, how have you seen them, their year zero to two, right? Because a lot of the folly in year zero to two is just not cracking what your TAM is and not understanding your TAM well enough. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I think first is deciding and defining what your TAM is. And sometimes it's okay to not know that when you're starting up.
Mm.
But let's say you manage to get first 100 customers. Somehow, your next 10,000 customers will not be too different from the first 100.
Mm.
And the next million will not be too different from the first 10,000. And so on and so forth.
Got it.
And the thing is that early on, it is very important to call these customers. And that luxury of calling is only there initially. I think, remember, Paul Graham mentioned to Airbnb founders that, "Hey, you have the first 1,000 customers, just call them because you'll never get a chance to meet them or talk to them." And when you speak to them, and the first 100 can come in any way you want. You can hustle, you can through social media posts, you can tell friends and family, it doesn't matter. You get your 100 through 200 through hustle. Mm-hmm. And I think after that, the biggest thing happened is that you realize what the customer is. And I've seen, especially in India, people are delusional about who their customers are. Because you have built a brand for people like you, you do not want to accept that the customers who are actually buying are nowhere close to who you are. And therefore, you stay in denial. A lot of time people stay in denial because they thought, hey, I'm making for engineers. But you realize that engineers are using the product. Some other set of people are using, SMEs are using this product. I'm just making this random example up.
Yeah.
And in business, you cannot judge the customer. Let's say the Haldirams in any city is not judging ke kaun aa raha hai, kya ho raha hai.
Mm.
If they don't like it, they can decide to not be in that business. They can say, hey, I do not want to be in this business because it seems that I'm attracting the customers I don't like to serve. I will change my business.
Mm.
Or I change my city. I'll change my location. But in internet businesses, you will get to know your early customers very easily, right?
So you brought up a very valuable point, right? Which is your own mental bias about who your customer is. Because with a lot of internet businesses, you may not always get a chance to meet them, right? Are there any, so talking to customers is one, but are there any tactics that you yourself may have used or successful founders use to just get rid of that bias of, you know, I want my customer to look like this and I want the perfect journey, ABC, XYZ. How have you seen founders change their mind about, you know, who their customer is, especially after those 1,000 phone calls have been made?
You know, the beautiful thing about 1,000 phone calls that no entrepreneur really makes is that it actually will change you in the first 50 calls itself.
Mm.
And I'll tell you why we don't call. The reason we don't call, because we are used to APIs in life. We have used Facebook as an API for growth. We have used AWS to build something and Shopify to build this API and this API. And APIs do not make you a good businessman. The person that who will really understand the customer is speaking to them and just asking them, okay, so what will you do with this product? What do you do in life? What is going on? What are your challenges? What could we do better? And you know, the beautiful thing about human brain is that we will make connections. We'll find the patterns. But you need enough sample sets to find the pattern. 1,000 calls is an extreme example, but even with 100 calls, I know founders who don't make any calls. Right? No, I saw their profile on social media. No, that's not their real self. When you speak to them, they'll tell you. And the good thing about the first 100,000 customers is that they're usually early adopters of new ideas, which means they are open to new things. And they are always enthusiastic to share feedback.
Mm.
Always enthusiastic. The next 10,000 customers will not even want to receive your call. Okay, kyun phone kar rahe ho yaar? And the next million you are not even going to find out who they are.
Correct.
So the only way you do that is you constantly do this early on. And sometimes people achieve the 1,000 customers in a month's time. Sometimes they achieve that in 5 months, 10 months. Sometimes the people shut down their businesses, start again. A lot of times, every brand or a business is nothing but an association or a collection of people who've come together either for a common purpose or a common need. And if you find the common thread, you can expand that business. For example, if I'm taking an example of LBB over here, because let's say you are the destination for people to discover. Let's say discover becomes a bigger word then. And then you can suddenly move from product to experiences. From experience to something else. Because the word that you will think about when you think about LBB is discover. Can I discover these millions of small brands? Can I discover these cool new places to visit? Can I discover something else? And if LBB somehow curates a discovery based on my taste or my people like me, and which is a cohort of taste or a cohort of income or cohort of urbanization, whatever that is, it suddenly starts becoming something. And therefore, it becomes commonplace in people's language. Are yaar, LBB dekh lena. And if you really achieve a solid product market fit, then it becomes a verb, right? अरे यार गूगल कर ले.
वी डोंट रियलाइज दैट गूगल वाज नॉट अ वर्ब लॉन्ग अगो एंड इट बिकेम अ वर्ब बिकॉज इट मेड अ सर्टेन अमाउंट ऑफ पीपल कम टुगेदर टू सीक इन्फॉर्मेशन एंड देयरफॉर इट जस्ट टुक ऑफ. एंड व्हाट आई एम ट्राइंग टू से थ्रू दिस इज दैट वी कैन ऑफन realize what are people getting out of this by calling them. And many businesses pivot when they truly discover through these calls ke hum actually kya kar rahe hain.
Any examples from your own experience where you've, you know, where you've had to change your mind about your customer basis the calls that you've made? I've had plenty, but anything from your experience?
So many times, right? For example, we discovered in Cred that people who have multiple cards love Cred a lot more because it is really a pain to manage due dates of 3 cards. And then I realized exactly that what I realization I had in FreeCharge, that FreeCharge was used more by people who have dual SIM phones because recharging 2 SIM cards, which are usually not from the same operator, is hard. And therefore FreeCharge is preferred. And people who have multiple cards is preferred because nobody has 2 cards of the same bank. So automatically it became a very cool thing that, oh, all we need is people who have multiple cards because it really, really makes it better for them. So we focus a lot more on acquiring those customers.
Got it.
I'm not saying that we stop the one card user to come. I'm saying my marketing dollars are not spent on single card users anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes a very powerful tool to understand that, hey, actually, we are not really for affluent. We are more for people who have multiple cards, but they're likely to be affluent.
Got it.
Because multiple cards are usually owned by people who are affluent. And therefore, you learn these realizations by calling, looking at data, and you constantly build hypothesis, check data. Sometimes check data, build hypothesis. You keep doing this loop multiple times. And any founder that does not do that tend to become a little lost on who their customers are. Sometimes what works is that you allow somebody else to look at your business. And sometimes they'll tell you, "Arey, ye to matlab tum ye karte ho na?" And it will be hurtful sometimes because they're like, "Main ye thodi karta hu, main to ye karta hu." And but what they have summarized is actually a better description of your business. But most founders get offended with that. But it has a lot of truth in it. There's a beautiful Turkish proverb which says that a guest sees more in 1 hour than a host sees in years.
Yeah, they pick up on cues faster.
They'll summarize your business like this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So when again, you know, maybe not your example, but maybe companies that you mentor, right? How do you create vulnerability for as a founder? Because again, you know, most of the people who are on this are entrepreneurs themselves. And I don't know about you, but I think for me, one of my biggest struggles has been being vulnerable around a stranger, right? And not because you have an issue with feedback, but because you don't want your, you know, hypothesis to get a gigantic puncture because someone opposite you has spoken truth or whatever, right? How do you create that dialogue with people? Do you lean on mentors, advisors? What is that framework that you create to help you build better, you know, mental models for your business?
It's a very good question. I told you that startup is a journey of knowing yourself first before you know your customers. And the reason it is a hard one, because you will have a complete breakdown to really knowing that you are not very smart. Every founder goes through that. I don't know a single founder who's not gone to the middle stage of finally finding out that I'm not very smart. And then what do you do after that is the real skill. Many people don't accept that, go back to their shell and continue to remain smart in their own eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say, okay, now that I've established I'm not very smart, what do I do now? How do I come out of this zone? Now, when you say that being ready for feedback, one method that really, really works is that you have to assume feedback is a gift and you have to be extremely greedy for gifts. So what I do is all the people who troll me on Twitter, I actively DM them and ask them for feedback. And most people block their trolls. I actually speak to them. And it's fascinating. Because first five minutes, they don't accept it. They get scared, actually. I have noticed that. I have one
troll that I was speaking to recently, and that person said, Kunal, I'm going to screenshot everything that you say over here. I'm like, yeah, sure, but I need feedback. Can you help me with that? And I'm asking him 5 times, can you give me feedback? And he's like, no, I'm going to take this and like put it on everywhere on media. I'll write a blog about this. I said, yeah, sure, but can you give me feedback?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't understand that you are asking for feedback. And you then you explain to them and they're like, okay, then normally aadmi lag raha hai. And therefore, it's not fun to troll anymore. We tend to ignore people who have strong feedback for us and surround ourselves with people who are mostly sugarcoating to us. And I can tell you very clearly, leaders who have people who please them around them or leaders who have real people around them, you can see the difference between those two leaders.
Absolutely. You actually tweeted this really interesting thing recently where you said that, you know, when someone gives you negative feedback and maybe if they say it in a derogatory way, right, remove the derogatory part out of it and then just look at the statement as is and analyze that, right? Where does that come from? Because, you know, like you said, obviously with any founder, with anyone running a company, it's very natural to not want to be criticized, right? And like you said, the best ideas come from people, you know, throwing different data points at you. In fact, the one person who I love meeting is Rajan Anandan, because he just makes me feel like shit. But it feels so good, because when you leave that conversation, you feel like you're, or Irina Vittal, right? I've met her twice. But you just leave feeling like I have so much more to do, and you know, this is like literally just day one. How have you seen founders create that mindset where you know, you're open to challenging your assumptions, but in a way where your interpretation of that assumption is still unique to you?
That's a great question. All the people who are good at giving you feedback are likely to be very efficient, and efficient people are perceived to be rude.
Can I just pause for a second, Aastha? The next time anyone calls me rude, I am going to literally replay this part of what Kunal has said.
Kunal, you've given us like 6 months worth of I told you so with Suchita.
And the thing is that, but it has to be two ways. If you are not able to express back, then it will always feel like it's a one-way street, especially in a work environment. But in a mentor environment, you don't have to give feedback back to Rajan that this assumption is wrong, this assumption is wrong. So when a lot of people write a lot about cred, I don't go and correct them. What if my correction will change their viewpoint? Then I will not know what is their viewpoint. So multiple people times when they're writing a blog about cred, they'll send it to me that, Kunal, do you want me to edit anything? I'm like, no. You should publish the way you think it is, because that's when it's pure.
Mm.
And then I'll get feedback from it. And I actively look for feedback because as we become founders, we get less and less time. And anybody who's taking all the time to troll you, usse free mein feedback le lo, because they have so much to say. And most people, the genuine trolls, people who are doing trolling to get just popular, they have less feedback for you. But people who are actually hurt by poor product, poor service, had bad experience with the company, then you know, arre yaar, ye to solve nahi kiya. And then you say, arre ye feature to already hai. They are like, oh, I did not know you had this. Right? And then you're like, oh shit, I need to solve this problem by creating this feature to be constantly there and not be missing. It should be visible so that people are not noticing that. Other thing I've noticed is that being thick-skinned, you talk about remove the derogatory words. I'm impossible to offend. I can say that in public forums, because I'm absolutely impossible to offend. The reason I'm impossible to offend is that if somebody is managing to offend me, the problem is not in their words, it's in my insecurity. So whenever somebody says something and it offends you, you have to look within that which truth did they touch that you are hiding from yourself that got exposed through that offensive statement. Because if it's factually not true, you are less likely to feel anything about it. For example, if somebody told me I'm fat, I will not be offended by it. I will not be offended by it because it's a factually true statement, right? But if I have insecurity about my body, I will say, how dare you do this? And then I will forget about everything that they are saying after that. because I'll pick up that word fat and my brain shuts down, amygdala hijack happens, and I will start going and bashing them back, saying that tune kya kiya life mein, tum bhi kaun se patle ho. And that's what whataboutery kicks in. Like India, when you do give feedback to people, their amygdala kicks in and they start doing whataboutery. For example, if I say, Chitita, yaar, tumhara commerce platform theek nahi hai. So instead of that, you'll say, Kunal, tumhara kaun sa theek hai? But that is a useless conversation. Instead of asking me, hey, why did you feel that? And what do you think is missing? So that is the useful thing about feedback. And I think founders, I don't know any successful founder who's not very good at giving and getting feedback.
Got it. If I could just segue into another part that, you know, I think is super interesting with both Free Charge as well as Cred, right? You've done very non-obvious things specifically from a product perspective. So you recently launched games on Cred, which I thought was super duper interesting. And I don't know if you read that article that I had sent you, the one that I didn't. I sort of mentioned how even gamification is going to get democratized and productized, right? Because games are going to be everywhere. You're not going to wait for Fortnite to play a game. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, your understanding of what you started out with, your understanding of human motivation, and practical applications of that in products that you build or even products that you've seen being built world over?
Yeah. So we realized that a lot of time there are prizes that we can give, but to not to a lot of people. And we termed something called a swayamvar, right? Like there is only one bride and there are many suitors. And what do you do in that case? So you make them compete to get that prize. And although it's a terrible metaphor, but it is still powerful because basically you do is in a swayamvar, all the kings had to play a game of skill to get the prize, and can you take that metaphor? So we did not launch games for the sake of games. We said if there's a limited prize and if multiple people had to claim for it, how do we give it to them? So can we create a game of skill ahead of it? And 92% of credit cards in India are owned by men. And we realized that that demographic may be interested in that. So we're trying a format which allows you to do rewards through games. It seems to be working quite a lot. We have like tens of thousands of people playing games every day on the platform to claim a prize.
Super.
And I think the word gamification is a problematic word in my view. If anybody has truly studied gamification, they will understand it is nothing but study of human motivation and shaping behavior. Mm. Anybody who's raised kids is already doing some gamification.
Mm.
Anybody who's raised pets is already doing gamification. They understand motivation, they shape behavior through rewards.
Mm.
And that's how we raise kids, that's how we raise pets, and products are no different. Because ultimately it's humans on the other side that you're trying to shape. And it has the same exact framework. So I believe that the best gamification book is probably a book on how to train a dog or how to raise a child. I would say those are the two best gamification books.
Yeah, I haven't trained my dogs, but I will read a book on how to train my dogs and then I will figure out a way to apply that to LBB. So just related to that, are there non-obvious hires that you've made? You know, every single book tells you to hire like a CTO, CPO, CMO and all that other crap, right? Are there any non-obvious hires that you've made at Cred or at FreeCharge that have also, you know, brought in this human element into, or this behavioral element rather, on how to think about products?
We did something different based on one of the insight that I had or epiphany I had 3-4 years ago. I saw one common pattern in all great B2C founders, that they are history of performance art. They were either in dramatics or they were singing or they were good at painting. They knew how to get applause from people. And applause can sometimes come from debating. Applause can come from performance or pleasing. You can do anything to get an applause. And they understood crowd empathy by the virtue of getting applause and being on the stage. So what we did is a lot of our senior leadership has background in performance art. So we have singers, musicians, poets, like paint, like all sorts of performance art. And obviously, that is not the only skill set. We combine that with the regular, are there high IQ, have the rigor, all of that. So we look for these dual personalities in our leadership because they tend to understand B2C better. And it's not reliant on only the founder to figure out what is right for customers.
Got it. What's your performance art? Do you have one of those? Like, I was a debater in college, so I totally get where you're coming from.
I'm terrible at memorizing things. The reason I tweet is these are my notes, and I store information in my brain in small snippets because I can't remember full things. And I was terrible at memorizing. So all my school life was finding ways to not study and do every extracurricular activity. So I do not have any specialty in any performance art, but I've done everything from painting to singing to dancing to I have not missed a single opportunity to not be in the classroom.
That's awesome. So we are going to break into questions in just a couple of minutes. But you know, before we get into that, I want to ask you my favorite question, which is what are the books that you've read that have also helped you change your mind or shape your mind, right? Because I was overcompensating for not having an MBA. I don't know where it came from, but I sort of, you know, deep delved into every single freaking book that I could find, right? And that's helped me a lot, at least in terms of being able to not just be more confident, but like you said, understand myself better. What are the books that you know, you'd recommend every single founder over here to sit and read?
I don't recommend books because I believe people should find their own paths.
Okay.
I do recommend a method though that seems to be working for me. And I probably picked up because of my philosophy background is going down the rabbit hole on any topic. And I have a very wide range of curiosity. Yesterday, I was researching about how multiple con men have done different things to con people, and I go down the rabbit hole to find out all forms of cons that have happened. Then I got recently excited about how Ponzi schemes are built, and then I went on to research where the word Ponzi comes from and what are the earliest forms of Ponzi's and what are the various factors of that. So I prefer the format of general curiosity and going deep on something that you get fascinated by. So what I do is, let's say I get super interested in the topic of trust, then I will read books, watch YouTube videos, look at TED Talks, articles, write about it, and get obsessed about it. So I've been recently obsessed about status and wealth as a two thing, and I've been writing about it, but I'm also researching and observing. And what happens is that when you start going rabbit hole, information appears to you a lot more. You will see it everywhere. A lot of people will share something back to you. So when people see you obsessed about something for a period of time, a lot of people will come together and start giving you information about it. Because when you are a seeker, there are enough people who will want to supply to you when you are a seeker. But you have to be an honest seeker and not a fake seeker. But when people read books, they are not really seeking. They are just reading. Because somebody else recommended. But let's say you are at life stage number 80 and you recommend a book to somebody with life stage 20, ke ye book padh lena. So the book will completely go over their head. See, basically every book is a way to make your brain porous for the next book. And therefore you have to find your own path.
Got it.
I disagree in the concept of recommending books, because what if all of us start thinking the same way? That is so terrible.
I mean, no one's saying
that sounds like religion.
No one's saying read the same books. In fact, actually, you know, to the point that you made, I found myself running into the same problem where I just kept reading the same thoughts over and over again. And now what I've started doing is I've started reading conflicting authors. You know, like for every...
It's a great idea.
Yeah, no, for
it's every, a great idea.
Well, there's a David Epstein, right? For every Hayden Christensen, there is like there's someone else.
So that's a perfect thing. So that's actually perfectly fitted for the rabbit hole framework. Because if you start reading about trust, you will have so many views. So I'm recently obsessed about what is intelligence. And I have come across 300 definitions of intelligence. Nobody has agreed to a single definition of intelligence yet, right? And then I discovered that actually intelligence is nothing but problem solving And IQ is just one method of problem solving. There are creative methods and people have other methods to solving problems. And therefore, the true skill is problem solving and not intelligence. Mm. So why are we solving for intelligence? Why are we not training people for problem solving? Mm. And then we realize the whole academic system has completely missed the point on problem solving. Our entire education system never told us how to solve problems. And then I'm like, oh shit, we are not very smart.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's interesting you say that because I'm literally reading Range by David Epstein right now. And he talks a lot about tinkering, right? And like you said, I think the beauty about going down a rabbit hole is you just keep tinkering till you get to some version of like your own truth or false, right?
So that's another thing. You never arrive at truth. You are always seeking. Mm. The word is seeking. The moment you have the, for example, in India, I often make a joke that the favorite sport of this country is jumping to conclusions, right? And that's not okay. Like, so they'll say, so Kunal, is this right or wrong? How do you answer complex questions with right and wrong and good and bad, right? And we tend to have the notion to ask binary answers to very complex questions. And therefore, you know, India is the only country where we had best hero and best villain award. The whole world has best actor award. The hero ho ke villain ho, boss, batao. Like, can you solve it for me? And that type of thinking is problematic.
I mean, I don't think it's an Indian thing. I think it's just like a human thing where, you know, like you said, it depends on it. It's been what, like 60, 70 years since our independence. It takes time to build in critical thinking, right? It also, I mean, in my opinion, I think...
I disagree. We had tons of critical thinking in our ancient books and all of the stuff. Our philosophy is way more advanced. So I've studied Indian philosophy and Western philosophy. Mm-hmm. I can tell you with all confidence that it feels like we've been through almost all schools of thinking that Westerners came across, right? And it's just that... So I have a view why it disappears every now and then. People who actually discover critical thinking become smart, and smart people have low birth rate, and that I think probably the species gets wiped out and suddenly we have a world becoming not very smart. And it's probably true. It's probably true. Like every country with higher IQ has low birth rate. It's a strong correlation. So maybe smartness results, it's not great for humanity because it just wipes them out.
I think this is hands down my favorite part of this conversation because I couldn't agree with you more. But before Aastha nudges me to like shut the f*** up, I will quickly switch over to her and ask her to shoot questions. So Kunal, a bunch of, you know, obviously a bunch of users have sent in their questions. I'm going to say, I don't know about your Twitter trolls, but you have so many fanboys and fangirls. And everyone sent us like pothas of questions, you know, as a part of like the sign up form for this particular session. So there are a bunch of your fanboys and fangirls right here, or at least people willing to challenge you. So Aastha, all yours. Should we start shooting questions Kunal's way?
Yes. So actually, my favorite one is that come from Stuti. So she pointed out something really interesting, and it's a type A philosophy question, which says, why does the audience prefer giving random feedback on social media and not when the brand asks them for real feedback through SMSs, email, or ratings?
Because private criticism does not give you status. Okay. I have always believed that the only way you get likes on social media is by being pretty witty or outraged about something. I think criticism on social media, for example, let's say if I really had a feedback as a founder, for another founder, let's say Sachita over here, if I tweet about it, what am I really doing? Because every founder is the easiest email address to guess.
Yeah.
In the only reason we become founders, because we can take the first name at our company name and use that as our email address. That's why we become founders, right? And it's the easiest way to reach out to them. But the reason when we tweet and I see founders doing to each other, and that is only because we are not really interested in the feedback giving. We are interested in building a club against a company where we'll say, oh, I agree, because hate is much more viral than love. And you will not see people appreciating something on Twitter because it's nobody will give likes for that because you look weak when you appreciate something. In a status-driven society, appreciating something makes you feel weak.
So can I ask a related question to that? Because isn't that kind of contradictory to what you said earlier, right? You said that products are built on motivation. For better or for worse, maybe some people's motivation is bringing other people down.
Twitter was built with this insight.
Correct, yeah.
Twitter was built with this insight that people will outrage and that will get us all as the eyeballs because people love to see conflict.
Mm.
If I was responding to every troll, you will have extraordinary time on Twitter.
Got it.
Okay. Atreya wants to know what startups are you bullish on in the next coming years?
I'm not spent time on evaluating startups since I have been building, so I don't know. But my belief is that in India, every product that creates hope or status will beat all the startups that provide utility. In India, we do not give money to people who give utility because actually, let me zoom out. Any nation that has not been through industrial revolution does not value time because we were never paid on an hourly basis. Any society that is not paid on an hourly basis does not value time, does not understand that anybody who helps them save time should be paid. And therefore, it creates a society which we don't pay for convenience. Like the amount of effort we take for saving that 10 rupees extra delivery fee on a food delivery app is extraordinary. Not realizing the time or saving that 150 rupees on a flight ticket by going for looking for offers in there. And we will go and give all our money to Sabyasachi. So basically products that create hope and status will suck all the profit pools in this country. It can be in form of education, astrology, upskilling, 2-day workshops to put on LinkedIn. All of that will make way more money than any product that improves saving your time. Because a country that does not value time, therefore we have no SaaS, successful SaaS businesses in this country. Nobody's valuing the time yet.
Okay, Mohit has asked something really interesting. He said, how do you manage transparency of what's happening at the leadership level, whether you're pivoting to a new product or there's funding or there leadership changes to your employees?
We are extremely transparent. All the data, everything is transparent. In fact, even when I have a board meeting, I run the board deck with the entire team and they see it, every single slide. We believe in extreme transparency, extreme trust. Good news, bad news, any f-ups, any mistakes, openly talked about, and encourage that from others as well. If there is a sensitive question somebody asked me on DM, I ask them to ask me publicly on my Slack channel so that everybody else can see my answer also. So I do not discourage sensitive questions, and often I tell them I don't know, which is an unusual answer that we don't expect from a founder. But you can say, hey, I don't know, and I don't think it's important for me to think about it. So maybe I'll park it.
Got it. Last couple of questions. Janil says, how can an early stage startup build trust when you have like stalwarts like Tata or Jio in the market, right? How do you as an early age startup build trust?
I wish I knew. But it's a very relevant question. In low trust nations, there is concentration of trust. 25 people in Bollywood generate 80-90% of all revenue. You will notice that like 10-20 business houses control most of the market cap of this country. Most of the wealth is 1% of India. So in low trust nations, high trust entities, and therefore super apps and conglomerates emerge more in low trust nations than high trust nations, because there is concentration of trust. And therefore, it is going to be extremely hard to compete with them. Especially, you'll never see people trolling Google Pay or Amazon. But look at the amount of criticism Flipkart had, Paytm has, Cred has, because we love it. And I'm not trying to be bitter over here. I think we are not understanding that by not helping local founders, we'll anyways make it easy for the global companies to win over here. Because every negative tweet has more reach than a single positive tweet. So you will always assume that this company is terrible. And it's unfortunate. It is what it is. And unless it's an extremely regulated sector, for example, banking, global companies will not win that because it's not allowed to get a license for them. But in open markets, we're going to have a hard time to compete with Jio, Google, Facebook. And it is a beautiful thing. You know, in low trust nations, you will also see a peculiar phenomena of, how do I explain it? There is a phenomena of anybody who's much more powerful or king wins. Because people, if you go back to history of humanity, you will find out that kings emerged when tribes started to become bigger. And the only way you can manage diverse tribes was a much more powerful person. So, and therefore the kings kept getting wealthier and wealthier and wealthier, because the only way a large society could have combined collaboration is to have somebody who is so much more powerful that they can punish and control it. So the scaling needs of humanity creates kings, and unless we become one, we will not be able to kill the kings.
Got it. Okay, Rishi has a really personal question. And Rishi, one solution that I can give you is give your founder a copy of the recording. He's asked that as an employee of a non-Delta 4 company, how can I push the founder to look at the product differently? He's very passionate about the idea, but has been blindly pushing things, is not very open to feedback.
I would say that don't try to fix people who are not ready. It's also one way of minding your own business.
Got it. And last one from Pallavi, which says, what is the right time to take your product to the market? Should you build it completely, then go to the market, announce it? I think she just wants to know what stage is right.
If you already have a way to get distribution, for example, Kunal Shah was already known, was having following on social media that could take the product live after building it more properly, because I knew I had distribution. So my first 50,000 customers came from only my social media, right? But if you have not had distribution of your own before that, then maybe it's a good idea to just go out there quickly and know if you are terrible about your assumptions and do that. So everything is contextual. For example, I don't think Reliance can launch something ki chalo dal ke dekhte hain dekhta hai kya hota hai. Like, because they already have the brand and the money, they would rather build a Jio and then launch it. And therefore, that startup was a $19 billion startup.
Got it. Asa, anything else that you want to add?
All done. I think that answers most of the questions we got. And people are very excited, Kunal, about all your responses.
So, Kunal, any parting thoughts, man? And let's make it constructive, because I agree with you, which is all of us have to like build each other up and make sure that we all come out of this strong. What's your? I hate this question, but for the sake of asking the question, I will. What's your piece of advice that you'd give to a young up and coming founder? What's your final sort of take for house?
I would say a few things. First is be in love of being successful. Don't be in love with your idea, because 90% chance it's a stupid idea. First time, second time, third time. So be in love with being successful, not being right about your idea. Number one. Number two, I would say is that understand human behavior. Our education system has failed us on that. Our education system has also failed us on history. And unless you learn both of these things, you will not succeed. And all the people who have succeeded have learned this the hard way. So you can start early and don't ask for one book on human behavior. Again, terrible mistake of doing that. Just get interested in that topic and go down the rabbit hole. Start with YouTube videos, start with any book you like, get interested in something. And the third thing I would say is that share your notes. This is not an exam that only four people will win. Wealth is not zero sum. And if you don't understand what I'm saying, my wealth is not zero sum, please research. When somebody says wealth is not zero sum, what does it mean? And only when you understand that wealth is not zero sum, we'll become an extremely prosperous society. And we'll all have extraordinary life, extraordinary society around us, with some real problems to deal with versus some of the nonsense that we deal with every now and then. So my request is that share notes.
That's awesome, man. Thank you so much. And thank you for sharing all of your notes today. I think, the one topic I love talking to you about and even getting your feedback on is just understanding TAM, right? Because I think that's at least one area where I feel I wasted 2 years because I couldn't articulate my, addressable market coherently enough. And I think, just the feedback and the inputs that you gave me when we met and even by following you on Twitter, you've done a phenomenal job for all of us founders. And thank you so much for what you do. Cred's going to kill it. We know it. So we're all rooting for you. We're all cheering for you. It's going to be awesome. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. You can catch this episode on Saavn, Spotify, and on the LBB web and app. We have sessions like this every fortnight. In fact, our next session is with Sakshi Chopra, who leads growth investments at Sequoia. And she's made investments in WakeFit, Beta 91, and a couple of other really awesome startups. So we're going to hear from her. And actually, the question I'm going to ask her is, how do you raise money, right? Because that's another thing that founders struggle with. So stay tuned. That's going to be 2 weeks from now. Thank you, Kunal. Have a super day and a really good weekend. And I really, really appreciate this. Thank you so much.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.